Population, Family, and Reproductive Health at Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health. He told me not to list all of his accomplishments, and just to say simply that in the past decade, he's been working with Ben Lazzari and colleagues around the world, teaching and conducting collaborative research on strategic leadership for health systems transformation in developing countries. Thank you. Henry.
Thank you. It's great to have an opportunity to be able to present some of the work here. Actually, I'm going to talk about a program in leadership, and I'm delighted that Ben Lazzari, my colleague who's developed this, is here. And we were going to have two other case study presentations, one from China, Baofeng Wang is here, also from Indonesia, but unfortunately Triyono Suwandoro could not be here. It fits very well with this whole concept of systems thinking because our leadership program is based on a reformulation of what is the health production system, the household health production system. Let me start first by talking about the way we usually introduce innovations into developing country settings. It's called a blueprint strategy. This was a expression that was developed by David Corton back in the early 1980s. And basically, you have interest groups, donors, and they have an idea, a 3x5 program, a polio eradication program, a DOTS program, or so on, and they have the money. They go to the country and talk to the policymakers and planners, and they develop project blueprints for how the program is going to be implemented nationally. It goes down to the managers and providers at the district and local community level. And finally, the program reaches the communities and households where health is actually being produced. Now, there are a number of problems with this strategy, which all of us are familiar with, because all of us, I'm sure, have worked in these programs over the years. So, if we go on, these are some of the mental models, some of the thinking that supports the blueprint strategy. First, that the ministries of health constitute the health system of a country. Second, that highly placed professionals know enough to prescribe interventions that will work all over the world. Third, that time-limited, pre-designed, inflexible projects are the best means of introducing interventions. And third, that outside experts gather, analyze, and interpret and publish data, and this is an effective way of gaining understanding of the realities in the field. Does this sound familiar? Okay. A fundamental flaw is this. The action is taking place at the households. They are producing health. But the learning by all of these experts, the management information systems, the evaluations, the research and pilot projects, all of that information is going up to higher levels. And so there's a total disconnect of the learning from the action. So the people at the community are being, in a sense, imposed upon by these interventions, but they don't really necessarily understand what is going on, and they're not building their own competencies and capacities to produce health. The social consequences, as I said, are no or limited learning by the frontline workers, who are the members of the households and communities where the action is taking place. Therefore, no fundamental changes in behaviors and no sustainability after the project has been completed. What's the evidence? Well, you look at the health disparities that exist after 50 years of these top-down projects, and of course, we're still doing them. Okay, so to change the way we act, we must change the way we think. I talked about mental models. We have to change our mental model of what constitutes a health system of a country. And the premise is, first, households are the primary units for the production of health. Mothers are the primary managers and implementers of the household health production tasks, and women and children are the major beneficiaries or the victims. Why do I say the victims? Because if the family doesn't have the knowledge and skills and competencies to provide the right kinds of treatments for whatever condition is there, then the family, the children, suffer. And all of you know about traditional practices implemented by families which add to suffering and add disability and promote death. Therefore, since mothers are a primary producer, particularly around the area of reproductive health, we talked about mothers and children early, then gender relations and status of women are key determinants of health around the world. And this we have known for decades, and there are huge numbers of studies just documenting the relationship of mothers' education to health and of the gender relations to the ability of women to be able to be effective in producing health for themselves and for their families. The second premise is that households, like every social institution, have three basic capabilities for the production of the desired outputs. Now, I didn't invent this. This is in the management literature, that every institution, whether it's Johns Hopkins University or Microsoft Corporation or General Motors or a Ministry of Health or a household, we have three capabilities. These are our resources, these are our practices, and these are our values. What do we mean by these? Well, resources. We know about the material resources, money, housing, possessions, utilities, property, equipment, technologies. And typically, these are the things that we measure in surveys. How much resources? And these are where we often say they need more resources. But then there are the non-material resources. Gender is a resource. Why is that? Well, if you're the right gender, you can do a lot of good things. But if you're the wrong gender, you may be very disabled in terms of being able to be very productive. Time is a resource. We forget about the fact that people in developing countries only have daylight and don't necessarily have time at night, whereas all of us here, you know, work 24 hours a day if we like, with electricity and so on. Health is a resource. Ethnicity and language are resources. If you're the right ethnicity or speak the right language, then you have a lot of productive capabilities. If you don't, you don't have them. Your beliefs, your knowledge, and your skills are resources. I put beliefs and knowledge together. You'd say, well, the villagers have beliefs and I have knowledge. But the fact of the matter is, all of our knowledge is beliefs. I believe in black holes, but, you know, I have knowledge about black holes, but actually I've never experienced them. And, you know, so that often we make a distinction, but we fail to recognize that beliefs, knowledge, and the skills that we have as a result of our beliefs and our knowledge are resources. A reputation is a resource. Actually, it would be more damaging to me and to any of you in this room to lose your reputation than to lose all of your money, right? Because you can get your money back with your reputation, but there's no way to buy your reputation back. Social status is a resource, which gives you access to lots of economic and productive resources. Social networks are a resource. And obviously, the reason we're here is because we're tapping into our social networks, which is going to be very valuable in terms of our careers in the future. Self-image and motivation are resources. These are non-material resources. And I want to stress that, as you'll see in just a moment. Practices. Well, there are a lot of practices. There are formal practices sanctioned by laws, religion, traditions related to marriage and divorce, property rights, interpersonal relationships, personal mobility, labor force participation. But there are a whole lot of informal practices at the household level, at the community level. This would also be true in a business and a corporation and other areas. The customary ways of making decisions, taking actions relating to gender roles, to marital relations, to sexual relations, to health care provision, to money management, to freedom of mobility. These are productive capabilities. They are non-material, but they are very powerful in the ability of households and families to be able to produce health. Their resources, their practices, and then their values. Now, there's been a classification of values that can be called progress resistant and progress reporting, and they're shown here in two parallel rows. Progress resistance are values, depending on hierarchies, whether it's patriarchal societies or other types of hierarchical societies, versus progress reporting, promoting values which are egalitarian. And we can look down here at status based on birth or gender, low caste or high caste, versus status based on achievement. Knowledge coming from traditions versus learning by trial and error. Conformity honored in society versus creativity, innovation honored. Destiny due to fate is a value versus destiny coming from self-reliance. Past and present oriented, thinking only about the past and the traditions versus future oriented. Closed-minded and arrogant versus open-minded and self-critical. Suspicion of others, other tribes, other cultures, other ethnicities, other religions, we can't trust them, versus mutual trust. Success depending on relationships, who you know and what your connections are, versus sex, success based on merit. These are productive capabilities as well, and of course these are non-material as well. So the point is that in a household, but in a community and in a society, I ask the question, which health production capabilities are more important, the material or the non-material? All of the values are non-material. All of the practices are non-material. And I listed a whole bunch of non-material resources like gender, time, ethnicity, social relationships, reputation, and so on. Which one do we measure? Typically, we measure the material, right? And if you don't measure it, if you don't count it, it doesn't count. And so, therefore, we ignore the non-material productive resources, and that's the reason so often our interventions have so little effect. Now, what do we mean when we say a household or a person is resourceful? Does it mean they've got lots of money and big houses and lots of property? Or do we mean that with whatever they have, they can be much more productive? So what we are saying in our leadership program is that what we're trying to do is to help people become more resourceful. And this may not, and typically often does not, require the addition of material resources. Winning the lottery doesn't make a poor man or woman more resourceful. In fact, it may be a disability, as we know. A culture is a product of the interactions of our values, our practices, and our resources. We talk about a village having a culture, but Johns Hopkins University has a culture. Microsoft has a culture. GE, General Motors has a culture. We all live in, actually, APHA's got a culture. We have values, we have practices, and we have resources, both material and non-material. And so we can talk about this as being our culture. The reason I say this is that it's often been said that culture is the DNA of social institutions. It's self-replicating from generation to generation, right? We replicate our culture, all of us do, in our own households and our own families and in our own society and all over the world. And like DNA, a culture is resistant to change. What happens if DNA mutates? As we know, about 99% of the time, a mutation, a change in DNA, leads to the death of the organism. And it's the same thing in a culture. Someone steps out of line in a traditional culture, they may be ostracized or may even be killed, for example. It's resistant to change. It doesn't mean it can't change, and it doesn't mean it's not changing all the time. DNA is mutating and evolving all the time. But the fact is that it is resistant to change if you just try to change one element. Somebody tries to step out of line, for example, in Saudi Arabia, a woman tries to drive a car or something like that. It will be resistant to that kind of change. Now, externally driven development programs ignore culture. Why? I'm not going to answer that question. I'll leave you to do that. But the point is that these are the productive capabilities. They are embedded in all of our cultures. Now, the third premise is that the households produce health in the context of the local community and the wider society. This is the nation's health production system. So we can look at it like this and say the households with the communities and the government producing health, that's the health system, not the Ministry of Health, but this larger context. And we talk about community. You've heard of the term social capital. It means all kinds of institutions. Low social capital, they may only have clan and ethnic affiliations and religious organizations, but as they build social capital, they may have cooperatives, labor unions, business enterprises, non-governmental organizations, and on and on and on. So we would say it has a lot of social capital, meaning that people are connected in many different kinds of institutions, not just based around religion or clan or ethnicity. And then governments, which are a part of the health production system, have many agencies. As we know, health is only one, and we talked about the fact that all of these agencies have got to work together. But they only have five instruments to influence policy: information, laws and regulations, taxes and prices, direct investments, and research. And this could be a whole presentation in itself. But the point is, if you think of every agency of government, there are only five ways that they can influence the way people behave in societies. So the health production system is made up of households, communities, and government, all of which have their values, practices, and resources, and their cultures. And obviously in community, you've got many different kinds of institutions with many different kinds of cultures. And government has got its cultures and practices and resources. And so the question is, how do you change the health production system to make it more productive? It means lots of cultural change. We talked about the Physicians for Human Rights, the fact that the ministries of health and governments have got to change their culture, you know, as well as the fact that the households and communities may have to change their culture, and we have to change the cultures of many other institutions in our society. Now, what are the essential features of this health production system? One is it's already decentralized. You know, we often say, oh, gee, the big challenge in health is to decentralize the health system. The answer is it's already decentralized because it's made up of multiple independent interacting subsystems involving households, communities, and government. So that is one of the challenges of how do you get a totally decentralized system working together around a common problem like reducing maternal mortality or improving child survival and child health. How do you get it moving together for a common goal? That is a challenge of leadership. It's already self-sustaining. We talked about culture being the DNA of societies. The health production system is multiple independent systems replicating its culture. Ministries of health are replicating their cultures. Johns Hopkins University, we're replicating our culture. All of us, APHA, is replicating its culture from generation to generation. How do you overcome the barriers to change a well-functioning system? Namely, we are self-sustaining and we like it the way it is. That's the problem about change. Most people don't like change. And so Ben and Bao Feng are going to talk a little bit about doing that. This requires leadership. You need first a shared vision. We want zero maternal deaths. Why not? You ask a couple, what do they want? How many deaths they want? They say zero. You ask a community, how many they want? They say zero. You know, so you ask the Ministry of Health, they say, well, we're going to reduce about 20% in the next 10 years. There's a lack of shared vision. And so we need a shared vision about common goals. And people create that. A Martin Luther King Jr. created a shared vision about a society. A Nelson Mandela created a shared vision. Secondly, then, we need teamwork, people working together with trust, meaning going beyond clan and tribe and so on, open-mindedness, transparency, mutual accountability. We talked about accountability for all outcomes. You know, whoever wins the World Series, it's not saying, oh, player X or player Y won the World Series. The team won. Either you win or you lose as a team, but you can't blame one individual or another. Most important, there has to be learning, generating new knowledge to mobilize the vast resources of ordinary people for change. And that's learning starting at the household and community level. They are learning new things. One point about leadership I want to stress is leadership is not a position, the person at the top. Leadership is a role, and so we need leaderships at the household and community level, at every level. So we're talking about how do we do it. We talk about a learning organization strategy. You remember the very first slide, I showed the interest groups at the top and then the policymakers and planners, managers and providers and communities and households. What we're talking about is the same elements in the system or set of systems, but we're talking about restructuring this in such a way that there's learning. You see a number one there, learning what the needs of the communities are and how we can produce the outputs to meet those needs, learning how the competencies can be developed to produce to generate the tasks, to the capability to do the tasks to produce the outputs, but most important, learning how the community's demands and needs can get into the decision-making process. And so it's a learning organization approach, and we'll hear a little bit more about that in the next two presentations. So let me leave you with this. Leadership is helping people be more resourceful in producing health. The old way has been professionals in facilities providing services. That was the health system. The new way is resourceful households producing health. And so what we're talking about is transforming the health system, and it means transforming the way we think, first and foremost. Thank you.
Thank you very much.